Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, holy crap, I think I might be in heaven.
Why is that?
Like, you get to wake up. Out here, it's 12:30 my time.
Right? Uh-huh. Are you waking up at 12:30?
No. I wish. Come on, I have a daughter.
Those were the days, right? Yeah. If you're listening to the show and it's when you just woke up to make yourself a bowl of cereal at 1 p.m.
with your blanket still over you.
Uh-huh. With your blanket over you and you've got your headphones in or however you listen to this show. Mm-hmm. Like, and you're able to do that at your stage of life, just take a brief moment to appreciate that
and enjoy it.
That is fleeting in life. Mm-hmm. And it is a beautiful thing. So it's congratulations to you, person who's doing that.
It's kind of like how we look at kids. Like, the worst thing, the worst aspect of raising a child is, you know, they're tired and they're allowed to take a nap. Like, they are encouraged to take a nap. And there's nothing more that you would love to do than take a nap. And they're just like refusing to do it. Like, I'm telling you, just enjoy this. When you go to kindergarten and they have nap time, take advantage of it, because you're going to go to class one day and you're not going to be able to keep your eyes open. And you're going to look back and say, man, I really should have gotten that extra nap in there, so I might not need it in here.
Yeah.
But anyway.
We should be more pro nap in our society, I believe.
Could you imagine how much happier
we'd be better for it? We'd be more productive. We'd be happier.
Yeah. Today we are not going to talk about napping all show. We are going to
get into the playoffs. Woo! Yeah,
right. The playoffs are going. Hey, do you want to talk about naps?
Oh Lord! I knew this was going to be one of those shows. It took me like 20 minutes to get on air, to like get on the link with you. It's just going to be like this. It was destined.
Hey, you know what? Sometimes you get those shows, but I don't think it'll be one of those. We have plenty of stuff to talk about. We have. So because of the way that yesterday's show went, because I got together and talked with Mike Richmond, which, if you haven't listened to both parts of that podcast, check out Locked On Blazers and then obviously this show. But I still have some questions left over from the mailbag. We'll probably handle those at the very, very tail end of the show if we have time to get to them. There is a ton of basketball being played today. And, you know, the Raptors played. The Lakers might see them in the finals. Obviously, the Clippers just played. And the league is fixed. The fix is in. The Clippers are getting ready or are going to have a clear path to the at least Western Conference Finals, as they're just ejecting Kristaps Porzingis for no reason whatsoever. So there's a ton of stuff to get to. And then, you know, you and I are going to have to preview the playoffs. By the time you guys are listening to this, we will be mere hours away from the Lakers playing their first playoff game in 7 years. Playoff game that they'll actually have a chance in more than a decade. So here we are. I want to start, though, with that Clippers game and then kind of work our way around the league from there. But the Clippers beat the Mavericks 110-118. And my question to you, Pete, is, did you see anything that makes you more or less confident about the matchup or what you saw from the Clippers just in general?
The Clippers are not cohesive on the defensive end. Like, mm-hmm. They're not on the same page. And getting on the same page defensively, that whole five guys on a string, mm-hmm. is the level of defense you need to play. And it's hard to do. And they have barely played any games together, like their main group this year. Mm-hmm. And it's very apparent that they don't have, like, we talk about chemistry in terms of like getting along, but the on-court functionality of that is knowing exactly what this guy is going to do, knowing your rotations, knowing your coverages, understanding, you know, the surrounding personnel, all of that. Like, it's really hard to play great NBA defense. And part of that is familiarity and knowing how to play with each other. And I think that the Clippers, they very well may have time to where, by the time they were to face us, if we were to face off in the Western Conference Finals, that they could be far enough down that path to where they're playing great defense. But they're more defensively, their successes are more a function of their individual talent than how well they work together. And I think that will need to improve.
Yeah, I found myself thinking, man, if there was only a way the Lakers could have played the Clippers earlier on, you know, in some way, shape, or form, if they could have played them in the first round, I'd feel really good about the Lakers in that series. Because by the time, if the Lakers see the Clippers in the Western Conference Finals, they'll have a lot of this ironed out. And they'll have it, they'll have used playoff, the playoff intensity to iron out those wrinkles, right? So, in that respect, I don't think the Lakers are really going to be able to benefit from some of these things. But I did see some things. Like, it's really too bad Porzingis got ejected in this one, because I think if Dallas steals this game, there's a chance that they could have actually, I still think I have the Clippers as heavy favorites. I actually tweeted out and said on the Silver Screen Show last night that I think the Lakers, Clippers, Raptors, and Bucks all sweep their playoff, their first round series. Mm-hmm. I still have the Clippers as heavy favorites, but if you're watching this Clippers team, you want to see them put on as many miles as possible, especially given all of the injury stuff that they've had to deal with over the year. And for, a game where the Mavericks, I'm not going to say they were going to win it no matter what. If Porzingis continues to play, their offense just always sucks late in the fourth quarter. It's just always terrible. So that probably could have been or would have been their bugaboo anyway. But if the Mavericks are able to steal a game here and then maybe steal another game in another way, now you're looking at a 6-game series that puts, 96 extra minutes on Kawhi's legs, on Paul George's legs, before the Lakers see them in the Western Conference Finals. So that was my kind of larger view takeaway. I think offensively, the Clippers are going to have a problem because they rely really heavily on Lou Williams, and I don't know if you can play him in big moments in big games. I think that changes a lot of what they're capable. Yeah, because of their defense, and then he has to have the ball so much that takes it out of Kawhi Leonard's hands. It takes it out of Paul George's hands. And I just don't think that he's a good enough offensive player to make up for how awful he is on defense. He's just, you can't play him out there. And if that trend continues, that's a pretty big shift in the matchup or the dynamic between the Lakers and the Clippers.
Yeah. That's an interesting point regarding Lou Will, because he's a hell of a player. Mm-hmm. But when you've got Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, the thing that Lou Williams does, like, you've got other guys who can do it
better
in a lot of ways. Right. Right. Mm-hmm. So that does it justify, it's an interesting way of looking at it. The one thing that stood out to me with this game was that Dallas had, like, they went on a 48-18 run.
Yeah.
That's a massive run. We've got you on the ropes, or we've knocked you down a couple times in a round, mm-hmm. right? That's kind of like what it was, right? Like, the Clippers won the fight, and it would have been great for Porzingis to close it out. That was one of those, like, yeah, that was frustrating. But that was like the Clippers getting knocked down twice in a round in a mm-hmm. fight that they ended up winning, and they clearly won. Mm-hmm. But Dallas had them on the ropes for a minute there.
Yeah, I mean, to use the fight analogy, they knocked down the Clippers a couple times and then, took a random shot that cut under their eye that wouldn't normally cut a boxer, and it really affects the rest of the fight. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, I want to take a quick second here. When we come back, there's a couple of things I want to keep on talking about with the Clippers. We are not going to continue the nap talk, even though we did. I did fall asleep during Raptors Nets, but there was a Celtics game that I found really interesting. And then, the Nuggets, for stretches there, they wind up beating the Jazz 135-125. But the Nuggets, they impose some interesting stuff for the Clippers. So we have plenty of basketball to talk about, as well as just previewing the Lakers heading into their first playoff in a really, really long time by Lakers standards. Today's show is brought to you in part by DoorDash. They have just been, I said it yesterday's show, and I'm going to continue to say it, DoorDash has been a huge part of how we were able to get through everything that we've had to go through over the last few months, and without them, I don't know if we would have eaten, quite frankly. But when I found out, that we were going to be working with DoorDash moving forward, I told Jen about it. She was like, "Oh, well, that's a pretty easy company for you to talk positively about." And just so you guys are all clear on what DoorDash is, I'm sure you've heard about it, but just to make sure, absolutely sure, they have partnerships and relationships with over 300,000 partners, whether that's in the U.S., Puerto Rico, Canada, Australia. They have restaurants on their app that are national chains. They have their local mom and pop shops that they've worked with. Personally, that's what we've really tried to stick with out here because of how hard this has been on restaurants. They have every type of food that you might be looking for, whether it's Chinese food, pizza, even froyo, whatever it might be, that they help you continue to, you know, get the good food that you want, and just as importantly, support restaurants that really need it at this time. So right now, listeners can get $5 off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter promo code LockedOnNBA. One more time, that's $5 off your first delivery, and then zero delivery fees on your first order over $15 when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter promo code LockedOnNBA. One more time, promo code LockedOnNBA for $5 off your first order and free delivery fees, all with DoorDash. That last bit to a really, really long time, because if you tweet anything about, like, man, it's been so long, every Sacramento Kings fan and
I love the we believe thing.
Yeah.
Like, and then the confused fans of other teams, like, what the? Yeah, it's great. I want us to lean into the underdog story.
Yeah.
Fact that, you know, we're a mom and pop
shop. Exactly.
All of it. Nobody believed in us.
Yeah. Like
the real, because, yeah.
We got a wash superstar. We have, you know, a player who can't handle double teams. Really, when you think about it, the Lakers, the fact that they got here in the first place is pretty insane.
It's remarkable. Like,
yeah. And then you're going up against the juggernaut that is the Clippers, where, you know, Kawhi Leonard is some combination of Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen. Like, it's just, you know, and then they have another Scottie Pippen on their team. What are the Lakers supposed to do there? I have no idea. I do want to, like, the other point that I kind of thought of as I was watching Clippers Mavericks is, like, you mentioned the what was it? It was 48-18 run, and a run like that goes on for as long as it does, largely in part, like you talked about, the chemistry's impact on the basketball, right? From a more utilitarian standpoint, but from an emotional standpoint, you need, in the playoffs, in this kind of setting where you're playing against really good teams, you need somebody to be able to step up and say, like, guys, we got to snap the fuck out of this. What are we doing? What is going on? And while Patrick Beverley, you know, talks enough to maybe do that, and Paul George will give any quote that he thinks that people will want to hear, the person who needs to be able to do that every so often is Kawhi. And he just is kind of absent in that regard. And, you know, when I was watching that run go on, I was waiting for somebody to kind of snap everybody out of it, but it never really happened until, you know, it did. But it was one of those things where I thought, like, that run didn't end, and then the run didn't make a U-turn because of anything that the Clippers do especially well from a team standpoint. They're just flat out better than the Mavericks. But if the Lakers go on a run like that, there's going to be, you know, you're going to need somebody in the Clippers locker room to be able to snap them out of it. And I don't know that that really exists because of the really weird dynamic they've had for all of the season.
Yeah, I can't comment too much on their locker room dynamics, but I will say what you're saying is an important component of a team, right? Is having somebody. Now, sometimes a guy can do that, and Kawhi is good enough to do this, where like they score three straight buckets on three straight possessions, and they are the ones, like they don't have to tell anybody else to snap out of it. Like they're going to just hit a pull-up three and then a elbow pull-up and then get all the way to the basket for an and one. And now they just went on their own personal 8-0 run. And now that 20-8 run that the other team was just on, is the momentum has been swung single-handedly without them having to verbalize that leadership. That said, a team, being susceptible to runs, I think it's an attribute that some teams have more than others for different reasons. And that's something I think to keep an eye on is it wasn't that, like, look, that Mavs offense is so good when they're hitting from the outside as they were in that first half. Luka's making, you know, he's this pick and roll savant where he knows exactly the right decision to make on how the defense is playing and kick it out. And so, like, when they're humming, they're remarkable. But 48-18 is such a massive run that it got to the point where I was like, ooh, like, what's this? I don't know, just something that it perked my ears up about the Clippers, Dallas as well, but the Clippers, where I'm like, huh, I wonder if that's how much that's a thing.
Well, especially given the fact that they were up 16 at the beginning of the run.
Right.
Like they had Dallas on their feet. Dallas was being memed already. I myself went and was looking for jokes to make about the Mavericks and about Luka it just happened that fast where things really turned, and I found myself like getting ready to make the other jokes where I have some lined up. I can't wait to use them. But yeah, it's wild to see a team as good as the Clippers. And while I know the Mavericks are also a good team, and while they basically, you know, the Mavericks, especially offensively, are going to do that to just about everybody, you know, from an offensive standpoint. But the fact that the Clippers weren't scoring on the Mavericks, given that like Luka is aggressively an awful defender. Like he's just and the Mavericks all year have been bad defensively, and the fact that the Clippers couldn't get baskets to keep up with them and stymie some of that offensive production and turn that 48-18 run into like a, you know, a 32 kind of 26 run or whatever it is.
It's not so much the 48 that's concerning as the 18, because Dallas can do that. They can go on those, like, holy crap, they just dropped a lot of points. But they are a team that, especially with the wings that the Clippers have, they should be able to score on to stem runs, right? Like just be able to get it. We need a bucket right here. We're going to overpower the guy who's on us. That definitely stood out to me.
Yep. Last thing on this game, I'm interested in your thoughts on this. This isn't like a specific basketball thing, but over the years we've seen players, I think Steve Nash was really kind of the beginning of this to me, where because of the amount, the burden that they carry offensively, it's okay for them to be terrible defensively, you know? And I find myself, like, you and I grew up on Kobe. We watched Michael, and like Magic wasn't a very good defensive player, but like
Magic was a good team defender. Like he led the league in steals one year, right? He was not right. Like he was not useless defensively.
Yeah. You know, even like, you know, Larry Bird carried a big burden offensively and he was not great, but he was also just not awful. And I remember when Steve Nash came along, he was terrible defensively. And James Harden for a really long time was terrible defensively. And I'm watching Luka, and while I will say that he is a special offensive player, I can't see the Mavericks winning a championship with him being aggressively awful on defense. And I'm kind of interested, like, how you feel about the trend of, hey, because this guy has the ball so much on offense, we can't expect him to also play, you know, even league average defense.
Yeah, that, like, when it started, I think you're probably right with Nash as one of the first guys where that was the case. Because even Magic and Bird, they had value as help defenders, right? But
Like, even Allen Iverson led the league in steals 1 year.
Sure, right. Now, again, those are guys that, of course, their offensive capabilities are why they're, and mm-hmm. ideally you give them the least strenuous job on the defensive end. That said, with the way the league has gone and so many bigs are now capable of stretching, like, most lineups have four, at a minimum, shooters. A lot of them have five, who are guys where maybe that's not their main thing, but if you leave them open, if you don't close out to them, that's a good shot for them. Mm-hmm. They're going to make high 30s on those wide open looks, even the worst shooters. And so I think that necessitates more switching, which we've seen. There's going to be more blitzing and more trapping and kind of the, it's interesting, defense, NBA defense is going through an evolution over the last couple of years mm-hmm. to deal as a reaction to all of the shooting, and like the concepts of how we defend are changing. And because of that, I think all five of you guys have to have some baseline competence on the defensive end, where, like, if you want to win a title, because that, when you're playing one team seven times, you're just going to zero in on whatever that thing that works over and over again. Like, you better be able to stop it. And if a guy just can't defend, can't hold his own as an individual, I think that becomes very problematic. And that compounds itself each round of the playoffs. It becomes a bigger and bigger problem.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. All right, last thing on other teams, and then we'll spend the final segment talking about the Lakers. I watched the Nuggets game, and I walked away from that thinking that, you know, because like Luka, for all that he is, he's a tremendous pick and roll player, but he's not really a huge threat to take advantage of like Zubats on a switch or something like that. He'll pick you apart with his passing, and you know, occasionally he'll step back and hit a three-pointer that you just go like, what the hell, you know? But I feel like Murray, like if you're looking for times or teams that could get the Clippers to slip up, and I still think they're heavy, heavy favorites to meet the Lakers in the Western Conference Finals. But what I saw from Murray in his ability to attack, you know, if it's Zubats that's guarding him or even Harold that's guarding him in the pick and roll, that could pose some interesting issues there when the Clippers, and I think it's going to be Clippers and Nuggets play.
Yeah, that's an interesting way of looking at it. With Murray, I wonder if he's like big and or athletic enough to create space against Paul George and Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah,
I think that he might have some, like, if they really need to lock him down, they've got Patrick Beverley for most of the game. And now that's going to be, like you said, against Zubats and Harrell, it's going to be more of those matchups. But the Clippers, you know, when they get down to it, they like to switch. Yeah. And so in those lineups where they're, you know, Harrell's probably the guy that Murray targets, I would guess. Mm-hmm. But Harrell's got some agility on the perimeter. He's always one of the elite charge takers in the NBA.
Yeah.
So he's going to rotate. He's got quick feet. I think that's a tough matchup for Murray. I think he's a little on the small side to be able to handle that. But he's obviously been extraordinarily impressive, and he's carving up defenses and getting buckets. But I think that's easier against Gobert. I'm not trying to besmirched Gobert, right? Sometimes it's, you know, we do it tongue-in-cheek, but Gobert has a harder time out on the perimeter, and it's easier to do that against that type of big than I think a Harrell type of big, who will come out a little bit farther on the perimeter.
Yeah. I still think, like I said, it's going to be the Clippers and Lakers in the Western Conference Finals, but, you know, are there ways that some of these teams, before the Lakers see them, can get the Clippers to work a little bit harder than maybe they want to? And I think the Nuggets, especially with MPJ, like, I was really bummed to see how badly Michael Porter Jr. played in the second half. I think he's a big key to that series if they, you know, next series if they play. But, you know, and if it's the Jazz, then, Donovan Mitchell would, I think he could roast both Zubats or Harrell, but either way, I think what you're looking for, if you're a Laker fan watching the Lakers off day games, are ways or things that might give the Clippers issues if and when they see them. Let's take another quick second here. When we come back, I just wanted to get us pumped for this Lakers series and these Lakers playoffs, because it's been a while. Today's show is also brought to you in part by Rock Auto. Head on over to rockauto.com and check out the just flat out best catalog of car parts you're going to find online. And not only is it just insanely filled with every car part you might ever need, regardless of what car you happen to be driving there, but also the prices are incredible, and they are as reliable as they are incredible. No matter what kind of background you have, if you're working on your car, whether you're the kind of person — I'm watching a show on Netflix right now where you have all these people who are just completely customizing their car with all kinds of turbos and stuff to go up against supercars, basically. Whether you're an enthusiast like that, or somebody like me who was given whatever the opposite of two useful hands are in while trying to work with them, rockauto.com is going to help you take care of whatever job you need to work on right there, and then also just get better as a car owner moving forward. So head on over to rockauto.com, and then at checkout, make sure you write "Locked On" in "How did you hear about us" box so that they know we sent you. One more time, that's rockauto.com, where they have amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the car parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com. So let's frame it like this. Obviously 2020 has been difficult on everybody, right? It's been kick to the balls after kick to the balls after kick to the balls. But especially for Lakers fans to go through what we went through back in February, whenever Kobe passed away.
January.
There you go. You know, to go through that, and then to have that so quickly followed up by COVID, and then, you know, to feel like you're going to lose the season that was when the Lakers were showing so much promise right before the league shut down. It was brutal. And, you know, to me, what I've always kind of been driven towards has always been the story aspect of sports, right? What's the mm-hmm. coolest story? What outcome here produces the coolest story? And not only do I think the Lakers winning a championship is that like the coolest story in the NBA this year, but it might be one of the coolest stories in the history of the NBA. You know, when you really get down to everything that the Lakers have gone through organizationally, the teams, fan base, collectively, you know, you have LeBron doing this in you know, as a 37-year-old. Anthony Davis is facing questions about his own winnability. Whatever he is, he's what? Oh, 35, sorry. Uh-huh. Year 17, age 35. So you have all of these things kind of coming together. You have Frank Vogel, who was like the third choice of the Lakers to be their head coach in the first place. You have Rob Pelinka, who everybody, myself included, was demanding that the Lakers go out and hire a Bob Myers, which, you know, I'm still not going to say I was wrong on that. But you have Dwight Howard having redeemed himself over the course of this season, not just as an NBA player, but with this fan base. And you kind of combine all of this stuff, all of that noise, and to now like be on the verge, on the precipice of this playoff run. Like I'm looking forward to, and it's a bummer we aren't going to get it in the city. And that's another thing to add to this, that the Lakers are going to be going on this run. There are a few things cooler than the city of Los Angeles.
You know, LA and a playoff run.
Yeah, mm-hmm. when the Lakers are making a playoff run, you see all the flags and you see all the billboards mm-hmm. and you see all the purple and gold with everybody walking around, you know, and that's another thing that you know, adds to the fiasco that this year and this season has been. But I find myself, every time I think about this series and every time I think about these playoffs, just ready to fucking explode, to rip the ceiling right off whatever room I'm in, just because it's been such a trying and taxing year that some form of you know, crossing that finish line first, and that checkered flag for the Lakers is going to be so incredible that I just want to get this thing going. And I have a feeling that the Lakers feel the same way too.
Yeah, I think so too. I'm hopeful. The games, the nature of these seeding games didn't help with that feeling of being pent up and ready to go, because we only one of them, I mean, none of them really mattered. We were going to be the number one seed.
Yeah.
But the Clippers game, you know, wanted to win that first game back. And so that was the one game where we really played like we cared. We didn't play particularly well, but like that was a very competitive game.
Yep.
And after that, like the games really, really didn't matter. And so like we've been seeing kind of the ghost in the shell version of the Lakers, mm-hmm. but not the one that we remember. I miss them a lot, and I hope that we get to see them when they start tomorrow in game one.
I think the Blazers are a good matchup for the Lakers to be able to find that again, though.
They're going to bring it. Like,
yeah,
they're going to bring intensity.
Mm-hmm.
Dame is going to drop six, going to try to drop 60 on us.
I mean, I'm looking forward to it though. Like it's
good for us. That's what I'm saying though. It's like, yeah. If it like is going to wake us up, if nothing else.
Yeah, I think.
And God, there are seven of them. Yeah.
Well, I also think too, by the way, like this is just how athletes work, right? Offense gets you going. When you're even in a sport like golf, right? A couple pars and a birdie, you know, will turn around. And that's not something where you think of like, you know, and the way that you really feel confident about it is whether you step onto the tee box and you hit a 320 yard drive right down the fairway, right? That's uh-huh. like the offensive, like that's like dunking on the golf course when you go out and you do that, you know? And, you know, baseball is the same way that, yeah, you have guys who are better defensively than they are offensively, but when somebody is hitting the ball, they feel more confident in the field and they become a better player out there. Basketball is even more so like that because it's an immediate, you make a shot and then you get right back on defense there. There's no pause like between right. innings or anything like that. It is, you either take your shot and you either make it or you miss it. And then you either have to rally from missing it on the other end or you slap the floor because you just made an incredible offensive play. And I think,
right.
you know, for the Lakers and this team, yeah, I agree with you that they do like need to wake up and either they will wake up themselves or Damian Lillard is going to splash a bunch of cold water on them, literally splash all over the court on them. And while obviously Dame is the huge humbling factor defensively, I think the thing that I think the most important thing that the Blazers present to the Lakers is an opportunity to get the offense right because they're terrible defensively. Mm-hmm. They are awful.
See the ball go in the basket.
Yeah. And you know, for guys like Danny Green and KCP, they're going to get a ton of wide open shots.
Right.
Even LeBron, like they're going to have to go into deep drop coverage on him. And he's going to have plenty of opportunity to hit from deep. Anthony Davis gets an entire series of going up against either Yusuf Nurkic or Hassan Whiteside, both of whom he loves to torch. So, you know, for a Laker team that, yeah, I agree needs to, you know, kind of have a jolt of energy or whatever. Just being able to see the ball go through the rim as often as the Blazers are going to let the Lakers see the ball go through the rim, I think is a hugely important factor after this series.
Yeah, no, that's something. If we were talking about the Clippers, a lot of this show is dedicated to, you know, potential matchup down the line. I don't love the Portland-Houston preface. You know, we're getting ahead of ourselves, but if we were to get there, I don't think they prepare us necessarily for the Clippers in terms of their style of play.
Yeah.
Like they're different types of teams. The Clippers are these like big physical wings, and that's really where the strength of their team is. And both the Blazers and the Rockets, if they advance, they're more guard oriented, right? And they don't have quite that same approach approach, right? It's a different type of team. So yeah, that's something that I don't love necessarily the potential of that.
Yeah. I mean, there are very few teams that have wings like the Clippers, you know?
Right. Like, but like, you've got the Raptors and Celtics.
Yeah.
But in terms of like the Celtics are wing heavy, Tatum, mm-hmm. Brown, Hayward, all these like 6'7", 6'8", 6'9" guys that can handle the ball, that can shoot, that are physical. The Bucks, right, got Middleton and Giannis. The Raptors have Siakam and OG Anunoby. You know, they've got everybody defends on the Raptors. Like, there are teams that kind of fit this similar archetype to the Clippers around the league. Like, I'd say the closest would be OKC. But even then, like, sort of.
Yeah.
So maybe there's just not a lot of preparation for that style of team in the Western Conference. But yeah, I do think that if we get there, and the Clippers do too, the Clippers will be a pretty severe stylistic change from what the first two rounds would look like.
Yep. Let's answer one question before we get up out of here. So let's go. Yeah. So I think Anthony WP9 writes, "Hey, Anthony and Pete, why is no one mentioning or talking about the Blazers, specifically Dame, who have been basically playing do-or-die basketball since the bubble started? No wonder they are playing good right now. They have to win, whereas the Lakers literally needed two wins to secure their position. Do you think that's an advantage for the Blazers?"
I do, in the first games. Mm-hmm. Because we talk about ramping up, they're already there. They've been playing that do-or-die basketball. Dame has been doing everything he possibly can. CJ's been playing hurt. Nurkic has been balling out. Like, they have been giving everything that they have. Now, now that they've gotten into the playoffs, it can go one of two ways. They can build off of what they've already done and kind of keep it rolling, or it can be a sigh of relief. We met a goal. Like,
yeah.
If we lose game one, it's not the end of the world. We can tie it up. It's best out of seven. Whereas every other game they've played has been like a game seven, mm-hmm. in order for them just to get to this point in the first place. So it could go. Yeah, I do think it's ultimately an advantage because they've got veterans that are on that team. I think young guys would be more susceptible to that sigh of relief. I also think that when you've expanded that much energy, the Lakers could be a very exhausting team to play. Like, mm-hmm. like, you're tired, and then you got to get in the ring with a heavyweight,
yeah,
and take those body blows. And that's something too, with as much energy as they've expended, as many basketball versions of a body blow that we can deliver early in the series will pay off as the series goes along. And so I think that from the Lakers' approach, just being very physical, very like, oh, this sucks to play against these guys, yeah. when I'm feeling this exhausted. The more we do that, the better.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, stuff like with this, I answered this question actually in yesterday's show, and I basically said that, you know, that momentum thing is a bigger factor in football where you have single elimination, right? And if a team is bringing momentum into that game and you have another team that not only had a bye, but probably also had a few weeks or, you know, a couple weeks off because they secured that bye week and haven't had to play a game like that in a while, it can sometimes be, you know, tough to ramp right back up and play against a super hot football team. Whereas in basketball, it's a 7-game series. So you might see that in the first game or two, but then eventually the better team winds up getting their feet under them. And that's when you really see it. And then, you know, the other thing too is, that's what makes, you know, not having home court advantage, I think, a bit of an advantage for the Lakers here, in that, like, if the Blazers had won either game one or two off of the momentum that they're bringing over from having had to care about these games for so long, and then the Lakers go to Portland, where that fan base is smelling blood in the water because their team took away home court advantage from the Lakers, then I'd be a little bit more nervous. But seeing as every game is a repeat of itself in the same building, with no travel or anything like that, I don't think the whole momentum thing is going to be much of a factor at all. I still have the Lakers sweeping the Blazers. I think I was giving Dame a respect, you know, game five, a gentleman sweep or whatever, but I think LeBron knows that they need to be as fresh as possible for whenever they see the Clippers in the conference finals. And because of that, I think every single game he'll probably set a tone that no, we have to take care of business here as quickly as possible.
Yeah, I certainly hope so. I think also, though, there's a certain amount of, we'll see how much of a switch they have, right? Mm-hmm. Because that's what it comes down to, is that something that they can do from game one? They've got a lot of guys on their team who have done that, who have been in the league long enough to be able to flip the switch. I'd feel more comfortable if we were going into this with like our regular rotation and mm-hmm. kind of this like set starting lineup, set group of nine guys that we know who are going to play. But the rotation, as a result of Avery Bradley opting out, as a result of Rondo's injury, signing Deion Waiters, signing Markieff Morris, mm-hmm. J.R. Smith to a lesser extent, looks like he's out of it. So much more is in flux that I'm more skeptical about our ability to flip the switch properly. Not necessarily LeBron, but just the team from a cohesiveness standpoint. So I think we would agree, Anthony, that if Portland's going to win games in this series, their best bet is on the front end of this series rather than the back end of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree. I would agree with that. One thing, I think one of the safest bets to make right now, they usually have a prop bet like first team to 10 points, bet on the Blazers. Like we are for sure starting the game down like 10-2 or something stupid. like we know that's coming. It's already, they're probably already when they start doing warmups, it's going to be 10-2 on the scoreboard in favor of the Blazers. So
I want to see us coming out. I want to see us coming out hot. I want to see us do that.
I me too, but we also know the starting lineup for one thing and how they've played together. JaVale in particular is a terrible matchup for Dame, or Dame is a terrible matchup for JaVale. So yeah, I just see Dame hitting like 2 3-pointers, CJ hitting one of his own, Gary Trent Jr. hitting a three, and the Lakers are down like 12-4 or something like that before we can.
Sure.
All right. That's going to do it for this episode of the podcast. We are officially in the playoffs. After the game tomorrow, Pete and I are going to be breaking down what we saw there and then continue to see. We're going to, you know, right before the Lakers play, we're going to be able to see Houston in action as well. So really it's going to be a sprint here. It's like a 2-month sprint where every single day it's four playoff games, and it's things that we have to learn from all of the teams. The Lakers are not just getting ready to play the next night, but moving forward throughout the postseason. So we're in this thing now. I couldn't possibly be more excited. Poor Jen lost the TV basically for the next couple months. Sorry, babe. But for now, have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. And Pete and I will talk to you tomorrow.